This is I Choose Life News and Views, sponsored by Indiana Right to Life and Right to Life of Northeast Indiana, committed to defending innocent human life for all people of all ages. Your hosts are Kathy Humbarger, Abigail Lorenzen, and Scott Kump.
Welcome to I Choose Life News and Views. I'm Kathy Humbarger.
I'm Abigail Lorenzen.
And I'm Scott Kump. I Choose Life News and Views is produced by Bot Radio Network in Fort Wayne in cooperation with Indiana Right to Life as well as Right to Life of Northeast Indiana.
And now, the pro-life news.
Reading from an Indiana Right to Life press release, Indiana's 18-hour ultrasound law will go back into effect on January 1, 2021, as a result of Indiana's largest abortion chain, Planned Parenthood, conceding it will not win its suit, which has blocked the law since 2017. The ultrasound law, part of the 2016 Dignity for the Unborn Act, signed by then-Governor Mike Pence, requires that women considering abortion be provided the opportunity to view a fetal ultrasound at least 18 hours prior to an abortion. A significant decline in abortions is expected in Indiana as a result of the ultrasound law going back into effect. From July through December 2016, while the ultrasound law was in effect, there were 496 fewer abortions in Indiana compared to the period of July through December 2017, when the ultrasound provision was blocked and abortions spiked to a 13% increase. The concession underscores that Planned Parenthood and the ACLU did not feel they could win the suit in the Seventh Circuit in the wake of this summer's June Medical Services versus Russo decision by the Supreme Court. 2 days after that ruling, the court vacated a previous Seventh Circuit ruling blocking the ultrasound law and remanded the case back to the Seventh Circuit for reconsideration. On August 7th, the impact of the June Medical Services ruling was felt as Planned Parenthood and the ACLU were dealt a blow by the Eighth Circuit when it lifted injunctions against multiple pro-life laws in Arkansas.
We have a wonderful guest on the phone, and I am so thankful. The other day I was searching stuff on the internet, and you know how that goes. You sort of get sucked down the wormhole. But before I was too far down the wormhole, I came across a blog called Lost Innocence, and that's innocent plural versus the noun innocence. So innocent plural. And what I was looking for was pictures of miscarried babies at certain ages. And I was having a horrible time trying to find those. And then this blog came up, and sure enough, here's these pictures week by week, people's pictures. So not hospital pictures, not textbook pictures, not pictures of aborted children, because that is a very different look than a miscarriage, but actually babies that people had miscarried and taken pictures of and then were willing to share. So a very unique blog site, not only in that, but in some other things that are done there. So Anna Crawford, who is the blogger behind that site, is here with us to talk a little bit about miscarriage and how it affects people, but then also what we can do for each other. As many of you moms know who have miscarried, we don't talk about this enough as a society. There's not enough resources. There's not enough knowledge out there. And not enough knowledge and resources means you feel alone when you're going through miscarriage. So hopefully we can rectify a little bit of that today. Obviously, we can't fix an entire culture in one interview, though I'd like to. But here's Anna Crawford. Thanks so much for joining us, Anna.
Thank you, Abigail. I'm glad to be here.
Let's give our audience a little idea of who you are and why you started the blog in the first place, because it's a very unique blog, I think. It's the only one that I've ever seen like it. And it has sort of a very specific niche that it fits into as far as everyday American life is concerned.
Well, I'm married. I'm a mom of 7 living children, and we have 4 in heaven. I started out in kind of the very ordinary way. We had 5 children. I had no problems whatsoever. I sort of sailed through every pregnancy, and I thought that, you know, miscarriage happened to everybody else. I think that's what everybody thinks.
Right,
it's just,
yeah.
It can't happen to you. You can't live every day freaking out. So you just sort of assume, well, this won't happen to me. And I was even a nurse, and I worked on a GYN floor, not OMB, although I did moonlighting. So I was certainly very much aware of pregnancy loss, but not in any personal way. And I really didn't even know, or I thought I didn't know anybody who'd had a miscarriage. As it turned out, I knew lots of people. I just didn't know they'd had miscarriages because nobody talked about it. So when I was pregnant with my sixth child, I was overjoyed. It had been a few years, and I was planning to have a home birth. And I went for a checkup, and they couldn't find the heartbeat. And it was early. I think it was after 13 weeks. And I didn't worry about it simply because I had had that happen with other pregnancies where the baby would hide.
Yeah.
And so I didn't think about it. And so they sent me for an ultrasound, and then they didn't turn the screen toward me and didn't say anything. And so I thought, well, you know, I'll let the lady work. And so I just waited and waited, and she took all these measurements and did all these things. And then she said, okay, you're free to go. And I said, well, what?
Right. There's something missing here.
Something wrong. And I could just see by this very careful look on her face, I just knew. I knew that it was really bad. And so I just sort of got up. I remember feeling like I was going to throw up, you know. And I got up and I left and I called my husband in tears on the way home. I said, something's terribly wrong. And I didn't actually get the results for 2 days.
Oh, my goodness.
The longest 2 days of my life.
I bet.
And so they finally, they called me, come in for an appointment, and I came in and I waited for an hour. This was just torture. And then they told me, I'm sorry, there was no movement. And I just thought, I just felt like my heart just dropped out of my chest. Although I'd known, but you just sort of hope, you know.
Yeah.
So anyway, so as it turned out, he had died at, by their measurements, it was 12 weeks, 5 days. It was literally, he had died 2 days before I announced the pregnancy on my blog.
Oh.
And I had sort of stopped feeling pregnancy symptoms, but I was ending the first trimester.
Right.
And
they're all supposed to go
what
away.
Happens. So I had no suspicion at all. And so this really, I mean, it hit me out of blue. And I just kept thinking, and I remember one of the weird things that I bet other people who have miscarried would identify with is, you know, my husband, some parishioners were watching the children. And so he left me at home and went to go pick them up. And as soon as I was alone in the house, I remember clutching my stomach and screaming, why did you leave me? And I, again, I think anybody who has lost a baby in pregnancy would think, I understand that. That's a weird, it's kind of like, how could you be kind of angry at the baby for abandoning you? But that's, you feel all kind of weird things and then you think you're crazy. You're not. So anyway, they had immediately, they sent me to a doctor and they immediately wanted to do a DNC. And I said, no, we're not doing a DNC. This baby is dead, but I'm responsible for this baby until we bury the baby.
Right.
And this is it. I was mama bear at that point. So I said, no, I'm not going to do that. I'm going to deliver the baby. And they looked at me like I was insane. And I thought, why is this crazy? Because I know this is a thing. And
yeah.
I thought, I'm not having a DNC. Because I thought, I know what they're going to do during a DNC, and I'm not having that happen to my child.
And just for our audience's benefit, when you have a DNC, that miscarried baby is not going to come out in a form that's recognizable.
No, there's nothing. In fact, there may not be any parts that are recognizable. You may not see. I don't want to be disgusting, but you're probably going to be looking mostly at what looks like just blood with some unidentified bits of tissue. There's just, you're not going to see anything.
Right.
And in addition, this goes to the lab and you're never going to see it again.
Yeah, because it's a surgical procedure. And at 12 to 13 weeks, that baby is totally formed. I mean, it's a big baby at that point. And so,
I mean,
a natural miscarriage.
Curled up like asleep in the palm of my hand, filled the palm of my hand. This is not a, oh, it kind of looks like a baby. Like,
yeah, no. This is perfect little replica.
That was perfect. I remember I was so marveled. But anyway, I mean, I'm jumping ahead. So they wanted me to have a DNC like the next day. And I said, no. So I managed to, in order that I could leave the office, I really almost felt like I was being held captive. I made an appointment for a DNC for a week. And the doctor done an examination. And of course, I was no, you know, they check your cervix to see if you're near delivery. And I was absolutely not,
right,
you know, in any condition that I was going to deliver. And he said, you're never going to do this. And I asked for medication because you can do that. There's medication that would induce labor, help ripen the cervix so that you can live. And he wouldn't do it. And I look back and I'm just still dumbfounded. And so I went home and I said, God, please, I need a miracle. I need to deliver this baby. Because I'm not going to show up next week. And I don't know what's going to happen, but please. And I, of course, at this point, I had told, I had, this is back kind of when blogs were really more of a thing than they are now. So I had told everybody was shocked and sorrowful. And I said, I need help. any of you who have delivered a miscarried baby at home or in the hospital, but not a DNC, and not like at 6 weeks, but at 3 months.
Right.
Please email me, send me, what do you remember? What do you wish you'd done? What did you have on hand? What do I need to expect? I was a nurse. I had 5 babies, but I've never miscarried. And I certainly, what do they tell you? It'll be like a bad period.
Well, no.
I mean, this is so far from the truth. It's not even funny. And the number of emails I've had from women saying they told me this and they lied. I was scared out of my wits. I went into labor. That's what it is. You're going into labor. You're just birthing a very small baby. It's no different. Not a bit. So God was merciful. And 2 days later, after being told this was impossible, I started spotting and I realized this may happen. And amazingly, in the midst of all this, you know, horror and sorrow, I was joyful. I thought, God, thank you. Now keep this going. And later that night, after the children were in bed, another mercy, because they were fairly small and we were in a very tiny house with one bathroom, I went into labor and it didn't last very long because I think I had sort of been in labor all day, you know, having the prodromal labor. And I already knew from the emails, people email me, I thought, I didn't know you miscarried. I didn't know you miscarried. Yeah, and some of these people had never told a soul. And one of them told me that nobody even knew she'd ever been pregnant. I mean, I got replies out of the woodwork. So I had gathered things together. I had Chuck's pads. I had a container, a plastic container of saline to put the baby in. I literally had everything except scissors to cut the cord because it didn't occur to me. That was the one thing I actually needed. My husband had to bring it to me. I thought it never even occurred to me because I forgot this really is a birth.
Right.
So I got in the bathtub because laboring in warm water and all the rest, and I immediately delivered the sac. I was both kind of happy because, hey, this is coming to an end and I'm definitely, definitely not going to be looking at a DNC. And also really scared to look because people had sent me emails, but nobody sent me pictures. And I'd look online for pictures. And as you say, you're going to come up with pictures of aborted babies. I'm not saying that that doesn't have a certain amount of help to it, but not if you're the one who just lost the baby.
Right.
This is really horrifying. I knew full well. I've been pro-life for as long as I had any consciousness of what it was. And I knew full well what those babies looked like, but I sure didn't want to look when my own baby had just died. So I hadn't seen any reasonable pictures. So I remember I picked up the sac, not very far because of the cord, and all of a sudden, I could see a little foot straight through, you know, it moved kind of because he's floating in the water and it went right up against the amniotic sac and I see this perfect little foot. So I had my husband bring me scissors, cut the cord, and then I was really amazed looking at him in the sac, but it wasn't perfectly clear water. And I opened it up and there he was and he was absolutely gorgeous. I mean, the most beautiful thing. And I sat there and I have this visceral memory of sitting in the tub, holding him in both of my hands and just marveling. I mean, the tiny ears, the tiny everything, you know, just absolutely perfect. Just a footnote, to this day, we don't know why I lost any of the babies.
Yeah.
This one or any of the others, we do not know why. And I went down the rabbit hole of begging God, please tell me why. And now I know that I'm just not going to know why. And I just have to be okay with that. So anyway, he looked absolutely perfect. He's absolutely beautiful. So I said him when I had kind of had my fill, so to speak, I was able, ready to move on to the next step. I put him in the saline, set it aside, and then I got done the business of delivering the placenta, which took an hour because I had stopped contracting. And I realized I have to get this placenta out or
right.
I'm going to the ER.
Right.
And I am not going to the ER.
Right.
So this is where my own OB training came in and I was able to do, you know, a lower abdominal, really the really hard massage where they're trying, if you've had babies, you know what this is
right.
like afterward, postpartum, trying to get your uterus to tighten up, you know. And so that worked. I expelled the placenta and checked it. It was complete and basically cleaned up. And then before I went to bed, I took an Innocent, is what we had named him, because we didn't know if this was going to be a girl or boy. And I had found out that he had died on the Feast of St. Innocent of Alaska. So I took him out and put him on the chucks and I took pictures. Now, my pictures weren't really fantastic, but I'd never done this before, to say the least. But I was happy enough and I had pictures of him with my hand in the picture and my wedding ring so you could see his size. And I thought, this is it, kind of. Nobody else is going to take pictures of this baby. It's up to me. So I took a lot of pictures, and then I put him in the saline and covered it up and wrapped up the container. I mean, this is a family household. I didn't want to shock anyone.
Right.
And put him in the back of the refrigerator just to, you know, delay decomposition until we could do a,
sure.
a burial.
Yeah.
And then I went to bed, and it was the strangest thing because I'm lying there, and my stomach's flatter, and I'm alone. I mean, that consciousness of I'm alone now. But I just thought, thank you, God, for doing this, because if this had to happen, then this is how I wanted it to go. So I think it was probably a few weeks later, I had been musing on the fact that, you know, I had an awful lot of help going into this because I asked for it.
Right.
Partly because I asked for it, partially because I kind of knew what to look for online, and partially because I was a nurse. I mean, I've been a nurse for a long time with OB and GYN experience. And I'd had 5 kids. So you put all that together, and even that wasn't fantastic, but that was enough for me to be able to manage a miscarriage at home. But what about all those people who didn't have that
right.
and who were scared to death, and then the doctor says we're going to do a D&C and doesn't give them any other options?
Right.
And so there they go. And then they regret it for the rest of their lives. And I know because people have told me, I regret that I ever did this, and I wish I had known. So that's when I started thinking about the idea of creating a website to organize all of this information in a way that would be very helpful. So, and I wanted it all in one place, and I wanted pictures because I didn't want people who were looking, what to expect? My baby's 11 weeks. What is he going to look like? And they can only find very gory pictures online. I wanted it to be a safe place that was full of all the information that they don't tell you, because there were other miscarriage sites that had pictures of butterflies, and it was very nice and comforting, but it didn't talk about placentas.
Right.
The icky stuff. Birth is icky. It's beautiful, it's God-given, but it is icky. And it doesn't help if you pretend the icky part doesn't exist, because that's what you need to know. So
right.
I had to make sure that my website had all the icky parts on it. Anyway, that was how the site began. That was what started it.
I love that you did something with all that, because plenty of us are happy to say, well, this needs to be fixed. And then that's kind of the end of it. But to realize that something needs to be fixed and then to do something about it is really a wonderful thing. So
yeah, it was very therapeutic too.
I bet it was.
I mean, it was hard. It was very hard because you kept reliving it, but you can't pretend. You know, for me, it was a good way of working through grief because
right.
I couldn't pretend it didn't exist.
Right.
So it was like, well, at least I can help somebody. And that's what people have said who have submitted photographs and stories of, this helps me because I feel like this will now help someone else. And
right.
so that feeling has continued on.
Definitely. So we're going to widen out the conversation a little bit here to talk about miscarriages in general. So, Anna, for the sake of our listeners, let's you and me establish right now. Are we going to talk about ages in terms of LNP or in terms of gestational age?
The most common way is just in terms of what people talk about, like I'm this far along mm-hmm. and what the doctors will say, all the websites, is they're using LNP.
Right.
That's the most common, and that's what I did.
I hate using LNP because I think it's dumb.
Oh, I do too,
But I'm interested in being easy to use for the listeners. So, okay, the reason, listeners, that we're having this discussion at all is that there are two ways to count the age of a child. LNP counts from your last menstrual cycle, or your last period, I should say. So from the time you have your period, then it's usually 2 weeks until you ovulate. Ovulation is when you get pregnant, right? Because that's when all of a sudden there's an egg present that can be fertilized. So ovulation, and then it's typically another 2 weeks to when you would have a period again, but you don't because you're pregnant. So LNP counts 2 weeks before the baby is conceived because they're counting from your last period. If you talk just gestational age, then you're starting from conception. So in sort of the conversion, if you're going from gestational age to LNP, you have to add 2 weeks to the age. So a baby that was 2 weeks old is going to be talked about as 4 weeks old. You're four
right.
weeks along because they're counting those 2 weeks before you ovulate, in between your period and your ovulation. So, all right,
right.
LNP is what we'll talk in. Here we go.
Okay.
So another little distinguishing thing that we need to do here for our listeners is the difference between miscarriage and stillbirth. Now, a nice
yeah.
way to avoid this is just to say pregnancy loss, because that covers everything.
Right.
But the term miscarriage actually refers to a pregnancy loss in the first half of pregnancy, and a stillbirth is counted in the second half of pregnancy. And I think actually those terms do us a disservice.
Do you think so, Anna? There's a disconnect. Miscarriage, just almost sort of the word, the whole kind of what it makes you feel is there's no baby involved.
Right.
In stillbirth, it's a description. You're birthing a baby who is still.
Right.
I birthed a baby who was still at 13 weeks. I mean, it was after 13 weeks, but that's how old the baby was when he died. So it's a big thing. And so there's this idea that, well, miscarriage doesn't count. And plus, in people's heads, miscarriage is, you know, you have that like a week after your period was due, and it's kind of no big deal. That's not possibly what people would consciously say,
right,
but unconsciously, it has this air of being really minor and not mattering.
And the experience of naturally miscarrying as opposed to having a DNC or even taking medicine to make
labor happen. Right.
Stillbirth much better describes that experience than miscarriage. Because
miscarriage also sounds like it's the mother's fault.
Right.
You know, you miscarried, meaning you dropped the baby. I mean, that's kind of what it sounds like. The word is just like, wow, we really need something else. It's not going to disappear from the lexicon, but yeah, it's really unfortunate.
Right. So here's our little petition starting today. Stillbirth.
Exactly.
So a couple of statistics, and maybe you have some, Anna, too, that you want to share. These are some that were fairly easy to find. It was interesting when I was doing my research for this, what was easy to find and what was not easy to find. So easy to find general statistics, somewhere between 10 and 20% of all pregnancies are miscarried in the first trimester. So out of 100 people who are pregnant at any one time, 10 to 20 of those women are going to lose their babies. That's the statistic in America. That's enormous.
And it's been calculated as much as 25%, which is where the I am one in four. I honestly can't remember who started that phrase. You know, that's like almost like a website. But yeah, I mean, then they've got the picture of the four women, and one of them is a different color, you know, just to represent this is, you know, you're one in four. You know, however way you look at it, 10 to 25%, it's still a lot.
Yeah.
You don't think about it because nobody talks about
it. Nobody talks about it. And yet there's so many. And that's just pregnancies. That's not necessarily women. It's pregnancies. So any particular woman could have. Right. So four, and you said you have seven living children?
Seven living children.
Yeah. So that, I mean, just the shock waves that this sends through our population are way bigger than what you see on the surface.
It is a very, very good example of the tip of the iceberg.
So 10 to 20% or 25% during first trimester, 1 to 5% is the miscarriage rate in the first half of second trimester.
Yeah.
And at that point, the terminology changes.
Nobody talks about that at all.
And that's what you experienced. You were in your, you were leaving your first trimester into your second trimester.
Yeah, I was. I had completed the first trimester. And, you know, this is when people, you know, the common thing is, I think not for everybody, but for most people, is you announce the pregnancy when you're, quote, past the danger period at 12 or 13 weeks is when you announce the pregnancy, which I have major problems with that.
Me too.
Just that practice is a big problem. But it's true that people will think that, oh, I'm home free now.
Right.
And I'm a living example of, no, you're not.
Right.
Nobody is.
Yeah.
And that's just the way it is. So that is definitely not talked about. That's really very unfortunate because people get caught off guard when suddenly, you know, oh, I'm 14 weeks, but the baby has no heartbeat.
Yeah, because you do think you're out of the danger zone, right? Like you said.
Right.
For our listeners, this program is going to be a two-parter. And so I have a note here that we may come back to talking about that practice of delaying pregnancy announcements until you're out of the first trimester because of the risk of miscarriage. So there may be plenty of other reasons why you delay announcing a pregnancy, but I think it would be good to talk about this. I don't know who puts it forth, but it's out there that you should delay announcing your pregnancy until you're out of that high risk zone for miscarriage.
Yeah, it's definitely advised on, I don't know how many websites that, oh, this is when you announce.
Yeah. So
we'll talk about that.
So those statistics were easy for us to find because places like March of Dimes report that, and it's easy to find on Mayo Clinic website and that kind of thing. But they're in these very sterile pages. They're in these yeah. websites that sort of are clicking through the bullet points. Like, here's how often it happens. Here's why it could happen. You can get a DNC or you can have medication. They don't talk right. about the nitty gritty stuff.
No,
and they
details.
Don't talk about it in a way that's real for women. No. Like, hey, when am I looking this stuff up? Not when I'm happy bappy and, you know, I've got a baby bump going, but when I'm suspecting that this is really yeah. going on and I'm already.
Right. Or I've just been told this.
Right. Or you've just been told yep. it. And so these sterile pages, I would argue, aren't really helping.
Salt in the wound. It's terrible.
Yeah.
It really is. Any pamphlets I've seen, it's like, oh my gosh. You can almost see the salesperson with a big toothy grin giving out the bullet points.
Yeah.
Most insensitive thing ever.
Yeah. So this isn't talked about enough in normal conversations. And I think part yep. of that is simply because it hurts to talk about.
Yeah, there is, I think, reasons why it's not talked about. One, you know, the more people don't talk about it, then the more people won't talk about it. You feel like you're talking about something that hasn't happened to anybody else. It has, but you don't know that because they didn't talk about it. So somebody has to be, and I'm not the only one by far, thank God. And it is more in the conversation now, but somebody has to be the one to say, well, I'm going to talk about it.
Right.
And I'm not going to hide it. And I'm not going to be ashamed of it, because there's just also a certain shame, like, I caused this. I did something wrong. I did something that caused this. And I will say right now that unless you're taking like an abortifacient drug,
right.
it is nearly impossible to cause a miscarriage. You can bounce down the stairs. You can, I mean, I'm not talking at 6 months
right.
when you can legitimately like rupture your uterus or something
right.
like that. I'm just talking about like,
early.
Let's just say in the first 3 months. Again, you would have to, you cannot accidentally cause a miscarriage. It's just not going to happen. So people need to go ahead, anyone listening right now who's worried, I caused this. And believe me, I went through that, because that's what's going to happen. You're going to blame yourself. You didn't. You couldn't have. I mean, you literally could not have. So just go ahead and strike that off list. You may never know why it happened, but you didn't cause it. It wasn't because you took Tylenol. It wasn't because you got in a really hot bath that one night when your muscles were aching. It wasn't because you picked up your toddler. It wasn't because you, I mean, who knows?
Right.
You didn't cause it.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I just want to get that out there, because the first thing people do is blame themselves. It's just human nature, unfortunately.
Yeah. So yeah. at this point, we'll do a quick pause. And for listeners who are listening on the radio, it'll be a week-long pause. But we'll pick this up with part two here in a little bit.
You've been listening to I Choose Life News and Views. If you have questions about this program, or if you'd like to support the fight for life, please call 260-471-1849 or go to ichooselife.org. Because without the right to life, no other rights matter.